Welcome to the Ernest Speaking Basketball Show, the first episode. I'm your host, Ernest EJ Christian. Again, follow me on Twitter at EJChristian7. We are part of Ernest Speaking Media, of course, and I'm very glad to, very first show of this podcast on this feed, and I'm honored to have on, of course, one of my favorites, one of my favorite writers, basketball analyst, and he's probably my favorite Twitter following in terms of basketball, especially content and whatnot. He is my favorite. Josh Eberle on Twitter, of course. His name is Josh Eberle of HoopMag.com. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. It's been a while, but I always enjoy hopping on with you.
Yeah, we last spoke actually on the regular podcast, probably back after the finals, actually, I think it was. And a lot's happened since then with the offseason, of course, and now we are about a week and a half into the NBA season. Let me ask you a question out the gate. What is your biggest surprise so far in this first, like, I guess, 10 days of the year?
Biggest surprise so far? I want to say the first thing that jumps to my mind, I don't know if it should be a surprise. Maybe we should have known better. But the Spurs coming out of the gate 4-0 without Kawhi Leonard, winning against Toronto. I mean, this is a team that, again, was supposed to take that step back. Oklahoma City added George and Melo. Houston added Chris Paul. They got older. They didn't do anything in free agency that anyone was really excited about. But here they are with, you know, DeJounte Murray, Rudy Gay, and the LaMarcus Aldridge revival, winning four games out the gate with a guy most people, without the guy most people had winning MVP. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and it's funny. Again, we have all these storylines coming to the year. Like you said, OKC, of course, doing the thing. Golden State about trying to win another one. Of course, Cleveland and all that, Boston. And yet the Spurs continue to do what the Spurs do every time. And again, they're 4-0 under the radar. No one's talking about it.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, this is very Spurs. I mean, we do this all the time. We've done it for years. And I think it was warranted this year where LaMarcus Aldridge didn't look like an all-star at the end of last year. There were legit question marks. Kawhi's hurt. Manu Ginobili even had a quote which felt like they were kind of trying to soften the blow where he said, we're going to start slow without Kawhi. And here they are. So we should know better.
Oh, right. Now, there was a lot of issues toward the end of the year, a lot of rumors about Aldridge and whether he was the right fit and that whether the Spurs were considering trading him in the offseason. That never happened. And then furthermore, before the season even started, literally the day before the season started, he gets a 3-year extension. So am I to believe that things are better now in San Antonio with him and Aldridge? Have they made things, easier? Are things better? Are there calmer waters now in San Antonio with those two?
Well, I'm assuming they came to terms. They figured they were better with each other than without each other. I didn't know that that was true for the Spurs. I felt like maybe that money could have been spent a little bit better elsewhere. Same with, you know, Gasol's deal in the offseason. But, he showed a renewed sense of awareness this year. The mid-range jumpers are down. He's being aggressive in the right kind of ways. I think we need to see how that looks when Kawhi Leonard comes back and can Kawhi go back to being himself, and then Aldridge find a way to compliment him without taking dumb shots and playing half-hearted defense and things that we've knocked him for in the past, but so far, so good.
What about, and like I said, it's a young year, obviously, very young year. Are there any teams or storylines that have been a disappointment so far for you?
Yeah, let's take a second and knock on the Wizards a little bit here.
Okay.
Because I'm pretty disappointed with the Washington Wizards.
Really?
You know, there is something to be said for continuity. This is a team where they didn't make any changes. They paid John Wall the mega bucks. Beal's on a great deal. They paid Otto Porter the big bucks. They kept him. They kept everybody in house. I mean, they added, Frazier and Meeks and whatever. Their bench isn't great. It wasn't great last year. But this is a team that went to the second round of the playoffs that might have made the conference finals if they had just a little bit more from their bench. And they come out and they look flat against everybody. And I know they started 3-0, but you're telling me Philadelphia this team's never played together before. Going to take it to you, and it's going to come down to like the last few possessions against the Sixers team, and then you talk all this smack against the Lakers. Mm-hmm. One of the laughing stocks of the league. Mm-hmm. LeVar's hyping them up. and you blow that? You come out and talk all that smack about Lonzo and this crappy Lakers team, and you can't even take care of them? I don't know. The Wizards, they should be, with the team that they have, with the amount of time they played together, they should come out and they should smoke everybody that's going through the regular start of the season adjustments, but they just have not looked good.
And mind you, that was their first loss of the year. I mean, and yet you're still disappointed about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the bar should be higher. We talk about the NBA where it's top heavy. This is a team that they won 49 games last year. They're supposed to take a step forward. I appreciate they went 3-0, but they aren't beating teams in a convincing fashion. And the way they lost to the Lakers the other night was just validation for everything I thought I'd been seeing. This soft, out of whack, don't really know what they're doing, and they should, because they've been together way too long to start slow.
Is it your assessment that the Washington Wizards, especially because of the Gordon Hayward injury, I'm not sure how you feel about Boston now that Hayward's out for the year, that the Wizards are now the second-best team in the Eastern Conference? Is that your assessment, that they should be number two behind Cleveland in the pecking order post-Hayward injury?
They should be. I mean, it should be a pretty flat race between them and Toronto to be second, with the way that Boston now has to rely on a sophomore and a rookie for 35-plus minutes a night out on the perimeter. And, you know, props to Tatum, props to Brown, because they've both been really good. But Boston obviously lost an all-star. They're going through their own changes. They're having a growing period. This is a Washington team that really, really showed something last year. You know, they had a bad year the year before. Wall has a career season. Beal has a career season. Porter has a career season. Now they've all got paid, and they don't look good. And here's the problem. You paid all these guys. You paid Gortat. You paid Mahimi. You paid Wall, Porter, Beal. Everybody's paid. So where is the incentive for this team to get better? How are they going to get better? They were the worst bench in the NBA last year, and there's no room to improve that with the contracts that exist. So one of the things this team had going for it was the continuity, the chemistry, the things that we all praise as analysts from the outside looking at teams that stick together. You know, Houston gets bagged on all the time for, oh, Houston just brings guys in and out. They don't have chemistry, and they're too focused on analytics and not enough on personalities. And, well, here the Wizards are sticking with their guys, and I don't think that faith has been rewarded early in the season.
Right. I mean, that's a pretty strong assessment, to be honest with you. I respect that, definitely. I think you and I probably, I'm assuming you agree with this also, too, that right now, that if look, it's only a week and a half in a year, but if the season stopped today, there's no doubt that Giannis Antetokounmpo will be the MVP. He's been the best player in the league by far, so far, through five games of the Milwaukee Bucks, anyway. Do you agree with that, number one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's been incredible to watch.
No question. Yeah, he's been just phenomenal. You kind of saw the jump coming for him. You know, in the off season, there was a good spat a few weeks ago where someone was saying Giannis was overrated, and I was like, that's the most overly ridiculous contrarian NBA take I've ever heard. Like, yep. It was so obvious that he was on the rise. Not necessarily that he was going to be this good, but he was going to be a superstar, and here he is. Like, I think you could argue not just that he's the MVP four or five games in, that maybe he's approaching like that second, third, fourth best player range.
Right.
Where we're really, really talking about him at the top of the league.
No doubt. Through five games, he's averaging 35, 10.5 boards, and 5.6 assists, 5.5 assists. And it's funny, I look at these numbers, I'm thinking, wow, this is great. He possibly can't sustain this. Then again, I'm thinking about it, and I'm really saying to myself, yeah, he probably can sustain this to some degree.
Yeah, I think he can. Honestly, I have my questions about Jason Kidd as a head coach in the future here. I'm not sure he's the right fit for them long term, but he's relented some. I think in the past couple of years, he didn't really want to let Giannis just run this team. He wanted to have a little more discipline in the offense, but he's kind of caved and let Giannis be Giannis, and we're seeing the results of that. I mean, Parker's not there. Middleton hasn't even been great yet. And they're rolling. I mean, they're absolutely rolling. And I don't see a reason why he steps off the gas. He's getting, I don't know what the exact number is, but he's getting inside and scoring like 13 of his however many baskets are coming at the rim. Like, he's just coming downhill. He's faster. He's bigger. He's longer. He's incredibly skilled. And the fact that he isn't even a killer shooter hasn't even been a worry yet. So, I mean, if he starts to add that jump shot and that continues to grow, I mean, the sky's the limit for this guy.
How do you view Milwaukee as a whole, though, in the East?
Sorry?
How do you view Milwaukee as a team now in the East? I mean, you know, we know Giannis is great. Can this team be also built, you know, along with Giannis? Can they challenge at the top of the East? I mean, a lot of people think that. Because I think now with the Boston, with Hayward's injury, obviously. Now, Boston's still pretty good, no matter what. You know, it's still pretty good, but it clearly could be better with Hayward. You know, with the injury now, it opens doors for a second team, like you said, Washington, possibly. We look at Toronto, of course, it's been consistently good for the last couple of years. And then you got Milwaukee, who's another team right there lingering. Is Milwaukee now in that same order, in that same top four, you believe? Or you still need to see more?
I don't think they are. In terms of regular season wins, I think they're gonna be that fifth team. They're gonna be a tier down, maybe win a few less games. But come the playoffs, if they're whole, they're somebody that could surprise you and sneak into the second round, I think. I think that as much as Cleveland is still the top dog and LeBron James will be until he loses, in my opinion, the Cleveland Cavaliers don't look good. They look actually very bad. And they're playing these,
we're getting there.
They're losing to Orlando, tough games against Brooklyn and Chicago, and this team, it's not working. And as much fun as it is to see LeBron play point guard right now, because this should have happened way, way, way earlier in earnest in his career, he's old. He can't play defense at the same level. They don't have any secondary playmakers. Dwayne Wade looks like the Clippers rendition of Paul Pierce. We don't know what's going on with Isaiah Thomas. The Celtics have lost Hayward. The Wizards, I know they're 3-1 and I'm harping on them, but they don't look great to me. Toronto is vulnerable. I mean, there is an opening in the East this year. If Isaiah Thomas doesn't come back at, you know, 75 to 80%, I think absolutely everybody is beatable, including Cleveland.
The way you sound right now, you feel like as though this Cleveland, like, we can, you know, in years past, it always chuckled to, well, it's the Cavaliers just trying to figure it out, stay healthy, and then they'll figure it out by April, May, and June. But the way you sound right now through five games, and I respect your candor, and I respect the things you say, because you follow this game tooth and nail. You think there are legitimate problems that could affect this team going forward, even into the playoffs?
Yeah, this isn't a matter of, like, we like to talk about, like, the magic switch for Cleveland. Like, oh, they're going to figure it out, or their effort's going to change. Like, the part of this trade with Kyrie Irving, I know they didn't want to trade him and it was forced, was let's get LeBron to do less. Like, let's bring in another point guard. Let's keep somebody who can run the offense in his stead. Let's bring in Jay Crowder so he's not having to play, you know, defense on Kevin Durant come the finals. You know, lessening the load a little bit on LeBron, given he's the minutes leader by a ton, it's year 15, yada, yada, yada. And they just don't have it. And bringing guys like Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade, who are on-ball guys past their prime, doesn't make Love any more useful in their offense. I think this Cleveland team is legitimately vulnerable. And if Isaiah Thomas comes back, he's the player he was last year, then I'll eat that. But until we see that, and all of the things that we've heard, and the worry, and the way that Boston traded him, and the way Cleveland was all of a sudden worried about this trade going through halfway through the process. I mean, I think there's legitimate reason to worry about Cleveland this year.
Now, you say they're vulnerable. Now, are they vulnerable in terms of, look, they're not better than Golden State, obviously. We can discuss that. And probably you can go down the list of Western Conference teams like OKC, maybe even Houston to some degree, and San Antonio, obviously. But when you say vulnerable, you can actually right now see an Eastern Conference team beating them in a seven-game series right now? And which one? I mean, I'm curious.
Okay, so let's go with the assumption that Isaiah Thomas doesn't come back ripped. Okay. Let's say Isaiah Thomas is like 50%, 60%, whatever it is. Okay. Like, the worries the Celtics had were justified. I can see any of Boston, Washington, Toronto, or Milwaukee giving them a series, because this team is just too reliant on LeBron. Like, he has to create every bucket. He has to close the games as a scorer. He's still being asked to defend guys outside of his position when he should be just not getting hidden, but being placed on someone who's not going to kill you. I mean, there's legitimate concerns, and I mean, I'm not trying to forecast doom in it super early, but this Cleveland team is not a super team anymore. I mean, there's not one star on this team other than LeBron as currently constructed if Isaiah doesn't come back healthy. And as much as I love Kevin Love, and I think he could still put up 25 and 12 somewhere else, they just don't use him in a way that brings the best out of his abilities. Like having Kevin Love be a spot up shooter, it just takes away so much from him. I think this Cleveland team has very visible holes. And in the past, you're like Kyrie and LeBron's back and forth. Incredible talent will bail you out, but LeBron's another year older and Kyrie's not there.
What'd you make of Dwayne Wade and the Cavs mutually agreeing for him to come off the bench?
Honestly, I think that was a really good PR stunt. Like, I think there was probably a talk in the locker room like, Wade, you know, you're a legend. I love you, but you're looking like a corpse out there. I don't want this to get bad. Why don't we make this? You decided to come off the bench. You're a great leader. Like, that's the vibe I got from it. But either way, it's the right choice. Like, he can't defend anymore. He wasn't adding anything to the offense. He actually looked kind of okay and then in the bench role the other night. So maybe against second units, he gets a little bit more life. And honestly, I'd like to see him be productive in his last couple years, but he's definitely looking over the hill.
It's funny, like, you know, and no one's really discussed this yet, really, because there's so much going on in the league. But this could be, I mean, I could see a scenario where he retires after this year, honestly. I could.
Yeah, I could too. I mean, he has a lot going on in his life.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a lot of business ventures. He's got his fashion. He's got his wife. Got, you know, he could do movies. He could do whatever he wants. Like, Wade's a talented guy. He's a beloved player. He's a hero. I don't think he really loved his time in Chicago last year. Things were kind of a train wreck. If this is the year Cleveland breaks down and LeBron wants out, like, I just don't know if Wade wants to do it. Like, even in the scenario where the banana boat goes to L.A. or Houston, like, does Wade really want to go do that one more year, move again, or I don't know. We'll see.
Right. As much as he loves basketball, I Dwayne Wade doesn't strike me as a guy that actually needs it to live, like Kobe did or Jordan for some degree. You know, I think Dwayne Wade will be okay with finding other things to do to buy time. So that's just that. Lonzo Ball. Obviously one of the biggest topics of the season so far. I got to tell you, like, I know he's had some struggles here and there, but for what I've seen, you know, I've watched nearly every Laker game so far this year, I think he's going to be okay. I think the whole, you know, Patrick Beverley in the first game and roughing him up a little bit, first of all, that is good for him because I think he'll, because to me, beyond that, you'll get no, it won't get worse than that because Beverley, to me, is the best and most aggressive defender in basketball at that position anyway. So anything beyond that would be easier for football, in my opinion. And I think his demeanor, I mean, forget the – I think the LeVar Ball – I think his dad and LeVar Ball thing's all blown up anyway out of proportion. I think that it's been limited already. That's all media bullshit. I don't think it's something that really affects the Lakers right now anyway. I look at Lonzo Ball. I look at the optics. I mean, forget the numbers and the shooting struggles because I think he's a young guy. He's 19 years old. He'll figure it out. I think Lonzo Ball will be okay, man. What do you think?
I think he'll be okay, too. I don't see Lonzo as a superstar. I didn't see him as a superstar prior to the draft. But, like, I don't think he's a bad player. I think he's a good player. Obviously, in transition, he's amazing. He's a fantastic playmaker. Check, check. But on defense, I mean, he's pretty terrible defensively at this point. He's high in his stance. He can't move his feet. I mean, he's a rookie, and he's young, and he's got, you know, probably a body that he's not even truly accustomed to yet. But that said, I mean, he's handled this all very well, and I think the LeVar stuff is blown. I think LeVar is an idiot sometimes. Don't get me wrong.
It's a clown.
Some things he say or says or whatever. But I think he handles it very well. I mean, his dad's his dad. He's been around his dad his whole life. I mean, he's played basketball his whole life. This kind of stuff is not new to him. I do remember the Jimmy Butler podcast with Bill Simmons a few years ago, where Bill Simmons was like, "Who's the toughest guy to guard?" Like, who do you want to give buckets to the baddest? And he's asking him all these questions, and Butler's like, "No, I'm not giving anyone any extra motivation. Like, I don't want anyone gunning for me. Like, the NBA is already hard enough." And it was lame, but you're like, "Wow, he really thinks like that." So I think that LeVar does add some pressure to Lonzo with, you know, kind of stoking some of these fires. And I don't think Lonzo did anything special against the Wizards the other night. But man, like, Wall talked that smack, Gortat talked that smack, and nothing happened. So I think as he kind of earns his way and punches that rookie card a few times, this will all really fade, and guys in the NBA will get to know Lonzo for Lonzo instead of Lonzo for LeVar.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Lonzo's demeanor, more than anything else, has been very encouraging. Like, even with amidst all the chaos between his dad and he's playing the Lakers and the expectations and whatnot, I think his demeanor has been, even with the Patrick Beverley thing in game one and watching him, his demeanor was perfect. Like, he understands it. He understands the moment, and then he'll... It's not a sprint, it's a marathon. I think he'd be fine, man. I think he'll whether or not be a superstar or whatever, that's another topic for another day. But to me, I see this kid, I'm thinking, yeah, he's going to be here for a very long time.
Yeah, it's a long time in NBA player. And also, while we're on the Lakers, not that I want to be the Lakers.
No, it's okay.
I'm just a vendor today. But, you know, I see a lot of, like, Brandon Ingram is a bust. Brandon Ingram is 35 pounds away from being relevant. And you know what? In that Wizards game, he showed some things.
Yes,
he did. Yes, he doesn't have an NBA body. Yes, he's thin. No, he can't put it on the floor. No, he's never going to be Kevin Durant. That was a ridiculous pre-draft comparison. But, I mean, I don't think I've seen anything from Ingram, that given he's like 19 or 20 or whatever he is. Super young, too. I think he was the youngest guy in that draft.
He just turned 20 last month, actually. Just turned 20 last month. Yeah.
I've seen nothing from him that's kind of warranted the pessimism that he's got. And I think maybe part of that's like D'Angelo Russell has really looked good in Brooklyn. They're upset about that. But, yeah, I'm not really that worried about Ingram at this point either.
Okay. Houston Rockets and Chris Paul, really. But Chris Paul hasn't played really three quarters of that of his career in Houston. And the Rockets are still unbeaten, and they're still doing their thing. When this trade happened in June, I never understood it. I never did. And then you see this is a very small sample size, Josh. So it's almost unfair. But you see him with Chris Paul, and to me, when I saw him with Chris Paul with Houston in that first game against Golden State, it didn't look like it was a natural fit. And then ever since he's been hurt, Houston's been Houston pretty much in terms of, you know, winning and in terms of this the offense flowing the way it has been the last couple of years. It's an unfair question to ask because it's only been three quarters into his Houston career. But what do you make of the Chris Paul Houston fit going forward once he comes back?
It's early. I mean, he didn't even get a full game. He was hurt. There's an adjustment period. I'm going to be honest. I don't think Carmelo Anthony looks good at OKC. Paul George hasn't looked good at OKC. Butler hasn't looked good in Minnesota. Kyrie had a good game last night, but I don't think he's been himself in Boston yet either. I mean, it's just so early on all of these guys. But with Paul especially, we got no real chance to look and see. I mean, yes, Houston's 4-1. They did drop that one to Memphis. Mm-hmm. But this is a team, like, I mean, they won a lot of games last year. They won those games by letting Harden run everything and getting, you know, good contributions from their bench. And Eric Gordon looks a little bit more athletic, a little more spry than he has in previous seasons to start this year. And Clint Capella's taking a huge step forward. So the Rockets are going to be a good team regardless. But I think we knew, with more than any of these other big moves, we knew that Paul and Harden was going to have an adjustment period, for the obvious fact that they both are on-ball creators, want to run things. And I think, I hold to what I said when he originally got traded, where the value in this trade is not them playing together, it's them playing apart. And when Harden sits and you get to have Paul run things, and when Paul sits and you get to have Harden run things, you always have a top 10 player running your offense. And I think this will still come together. People are being a little ridiculous with the, you know, Clippers are playing well, Rockets are playing well, maybe Chris Paul is not as great as we thought. I think these are premature.
Yeah.
We know Chris Paul's a good player. We've seen him for, you know, 11 years doing this at a very high level. I think they'll still figure it out.
Actually, I said he's unbeaten. That's actually 4-1. But a team that is unbeaten is Paul's former team, the Clippers. What do you make of the Clippers right now, man? 4-0? I mean, obviously, post-Chris Paul era, it seems to be that this team seems to be a little more. And I love Chris Paul. I'm not even saying that he's a problem at all. I would never even suggest that. But this team feels free. This team feels like it's just having fun and it's coming to work. And it feels like there's no – I want to call Chris Paul an albatross because he's not an albatross. But it feels like there's just no albatross around this team right now. They're just playing good, consistent basketball and Doc Rivers can coach. That's what I'm seeing here. What is it with this 4-0 Clippers so far? What is it?
I think it's fair to say a weight has been lifted from this Clippers team.
Okay.
And I'm not putting that on Paul.
Right.
Specifically, like he was the cancer in the locker room or any of that. It's just this team had so many seasons of winning, you know, 50 games and looking great in the regular season. And don't forget last year, through 14 games, they had the best net rating ever or whatever it was. And they look so good to start every year, and then things have just fallen apart repeatedly, and Paul has been hurt, Griffin has been hurt. And we've been doing this for, you know, 5 years, and I felt like it was so stagnant where, you know, I think it was 2014 or 2015 where Doc said, you know, after they got eliminated, like, hey, we're going to have to look, we're going to have to switch some things up. If you don't win, rosters can get stagnant if they don't change. And nothing changed for this team. I mean, they went back to Paul, Jordan, and Griffin, and, you know, they brought in some additions here and there, but it just didn't work. So I think it's a sense of, we hit a reset. You know, we're restarting. We're trying something new. It's not that Paul was bad for us. It's not that Paul was dragging us down, but we needed a new identity. He needed a new venue. And I think it might be just one of those things where everybody's mutually better off. You don't get worse, or maybe that's not the right word. You'll never do poorly adding guys like Patrick Beverley in a trade. Guys that just give that effort level every night that are respected defensively. Gallo is, I think, a perennially underrated player that was a really not talked enough about as a pickup. Great player at both ends. Blake Griffin has had problems with injuries, but we know he's a star when he's healthy. And I think the big thing is Doc Rivers is very much on the hot seat.
Yes.
You know, they took away his GM job. They're looking at him like, what did you really do that Vinny Del Negro didn't do before you? You didn't get anything done with these all-stars. So I think that there's a renewed sense of we need to really see something and change something, and maybe that shift is the big thing. Not so much addition by subtraction, but just a change.
Yeah. All right, finally, let you go. Finally, another 1-4, there's still one of my favorite watches on League Pass, and that's the Sixers. 1-4 start, albeit a lot of tough games there. They played against really good teams out the gate. The Bostons and the Torontos and Houston's at the buzzer. Lost to Houston at the buzzer a couple nights ago. Despite the 1-4 start, Ben Simmons looks great. Embiid looks really good. Where are you with Philadelphia? Do you think at some point they'll turn around? Do you think they'll be okay going forward once they settle in?
Yeah, I mean, I've been super, like, here's the thing, like, I'm way lower on the Wizards after starting 3-1 than everybody else, and I seem to be way higher on the Sixers after starting 1-4 than everybody else. Like, I really do believe that, like, chemistry and time together on the court and off the court makes a huge difference. And this Philadelphia team, like, Bayless was hurt most of last year. Reddick's new. Simmons hasn't played. Embiid's played 31 career games. Fultz is going through, like, some sort of midlife, quarter-life crisis with his shoulder. And all of this, you know, whatever, these variables are in play. And they came out, they punched the Wizards in the mouth, they almost win that game. They came out, they punched the Celtics in the mouth, they almost win that game. Toronto beat them handily, that's fine. You had three of the four best teams in the East in the three first games you played together.
And Washington,
you beat Detroit. Yeah, Washington first. Washington, Boston, Toronto, right? Like, Toronto's the only one of those teams that beat them solidly.
Mm-hmm.
They beat Detroit, and they go on Houston, and they should have won that Houston game. You know, if Brett Brown has a little bit more experience coaching games that matter the last few years,
exactly,
they win that game. But, I mean, this is a team that, you know, Ben Simmons looks amazing. I wasn't sure with Ben Simmons. Like, I didn't know he missed a year, him not going to the tourney. There were some flags. But the talent is undeniable. He's just been fantastic in the first five games. And Embiid has been fantastic in the first four games that he's played. I mean, this is a good core. Like, Bayless and Redick are great shooters. Amir was a good veteran add. You know, the Feds. I think there's so many reasons to be excited about Philadelphia this year and how well they've played given the schedule that, you know, in the next five games, they got Dallas, Houston, Atlanta, Indiana, Utah, Sacramento. Like, look for them to go 500 over that next stretch and build on it. And I think I haven't seen anything negative from the Sixers. Their medical staff craziness aside, I haven't seen anything negative from the Sixers this year.
To me, I know Embiid is pretty much like a unicorn. People, a very interesting guy. But to me, I turn the Sixers game. I'm looking at Ben Simmons, man. Ben Simmons is the guy that comes off my screen, and I see a lot of, like, obviously the LeBron comparisons when I was a passer. But I feel like if he gets even some of a jump shot going forward and some signature shot, maybe a floater, because he loves to go to the basket and then create. My God, this guy could be a top 10, top 5 player very soon.
Oh yeah, I mean, put me on if we're taking sides. I'm in Cam Simmons. Like, after five games.
Yeah.
And that's not even a small sample because we've only had Embiid for what, 35 games. So
mm-hmm.
it's not like it's crazy, but. Honestly, I mean, the stat is still staggering. You know, Oden played 51 games more than Embiid through his first 3 years. We've never seen anybody miss the amount of time Embiid has and had a nice, long, beautiful career, and I wish him the best, and hopefully that's the case. But I just think Simmons is that kind of a talent as well. And we look at, you know, perimeter big men who can run the perimeter and create the offense have dictated this league for a long time. And you look at LeBron, what he's done the last 15 years, what Giannis is turning into. Simmons isn't necessarily the same mold, but he's closer to that. And I think his skill set is very where the NBA is right now. Like, I think Simmons is somebody you can be very, very excited about. And as long as him and Embiid stay healthy this year, I'll stick with the Sixers in the playoff prediction.
Anyway, you can follow Josh Eberle on Twitter at Josh Eberle. That's Josh E B as in boy, E R L E Y. Follow his great work, of course, at HoopMag on HoopMag, hoop.nba.com, of course. Josh, we'll talk very soon, man. I'm glad to have the show kicked off and you're part of it. And hopefully we'll check in a couple weeks.
Yeah, thanks again, Ernest.
Absolutely. Take care, man.